Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, it's only 11 o'clock in the morning today, December 4th, Monday. Normally we start at 10, but I had a, what they call a modality. I had a discussion with some doctors this morning on the internet. I was totally delayed. I didn't even know if I'll have even time for a broadcast today, but definitely I do. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to speak to John Bailey this morning, when normally he comes on at 10, and Michael Edelman as well, usually at 10:30. So I didn't even know I'd be able to get on, and I only posted this broadcast literally not even 15 minutes ago. Anyway, so let's catch up with what's going on around the world. I guess the most in-your-face issue is what's going on with Israel and Hamas, the war there. The IDF, evidently, the Israel Defense Forces, they've expanded the ground offensive in Gaza. Israel says it has intensified its offensive against Hamas militants in the Gaza Strip, as international concern grows over mounting civilian casualties. Well, Israel has said it is expanding its ground offensive in of the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military has issued fresh evacuation orders for 20 areas of the city of Khan Yunis. And the Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza said that the death toll has reached 15,889. And Germany has urged Israel to protect civilians in Gaza. So the UN says that 80% of the Gazan population has been internally displaced. The United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, said on Monday that close to 1.9 million people across Gaza have been displaced since October 7. And this is equivalent to 80% of the population. Of those who had been forced to leave their homes, 1.2 million people had sought shelter in just 156 UNRWA facilities. The average number of IDPs, internally displaced persons, in UNRWA shelters is 10,326, more than four times their capacity, the agency said in its report. And the UNRWA facilities were also not spared the violence, with 30 installations being directly hit and 55 sustaining damage. It did not say who was responsible for the strikes. Some 111 UNRWA workers have also been killed in Gaza since the war broke out following Hamas' terror attacks on October 7. And the figures are provided by the UNRWA one second here.
I got this. Message. I don't understand what it's about here. It's just a reminder for tomorrow's medical appointment that I have.
Okay. Well, Iran is pulling the strings amid fears of a wider Middle East conflict. Experts advise Deutsche Welle, the German newspaper. Interventions and attempted attacks on Israeli and international assets by Yemen's Houthis in the Red Sea are a sign that Iran is trying to influence the conflict in the region indirectly, according to the Middle East expert by the name of Daniel Gerlach. Tehran is pulling the strings, he told Deutsche Welle, estimating that Iran is ultimately using the Houthi regime as a useful puppet for its own ends. Gerlach is editor-in-chief at the German Middle East magazine Zenith, said that the Iran-backed Houthi rebels are weak and their involvement is more symbolic. But he added it is also a sign that Iran is trying to influence the conflict. Quote, Iran wants to shift the conflict away from the Persian Gulf area, where it's about to normalize relations with Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states, he explained, saying that the Bab el-Mandeb Strait between Yemen and the Horn of Africa would be ideal. Germany is urging Israel to protect civilians in Gaza. So that's 2 hours ago. The German Foreign Ministry has said that it expects Israel to provide, quote, realistic, end quote, protections for civilians in Gaza as it extends its ground offensive to the southern half of the besieged enclave. Quote, sometimes we expect from Israel, is that they not only urge civilians to leave the danger zone, but that they are in a realistic position to find safe shelter elsewhere. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Sebastian Fischer told a regular press briefing, quote, too many civilians have already been killed in the war, he added. German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock mirrored the sentiment while also stressing that Israel's right to self-defense, quote, the central question is how this right to self-defense is carried out. There is a responsibility to alleviate civilian suffering, especially in this phase, she added, she said during a Green Party conference in Berlin, because too many Palestinians have already died, she added. Just under 16,000 people have been killed in Gaza, according to the Hamas-run health ministry, since Israel commenced its response to the Hamas terror attacks of October 7. Well, the Red Cross chief says that the suffering is, quote, intolerable, end quote, after arriving in Gaza. The president of the International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, Miljana Spoljaric, arrived in Gaza on Monday. She says, I have arrived in Gaza where people's suffering is intolerable, end quote. She wrote on social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter, quote, I repeat our urgent call for civilians to be protected in line with the laws of war and for aid to enter unimpeded. Miljana Spoljaric said, I have arrived in Gaza where people's suffering is intolerable. I repeat our urgent call for civilians to be protected in line with the laws of war and for aid to enter unimpeded. The hostages must be released and ICRC allowed to safely visit them. Israel and the occupied territories, president of the ICRC, arrived in President Spoljaric's will call for the protection of civilians in Gaza and protect the laws of the war. She will also reiterate the ICRC call. So we'll just see where all that goes. Then Erdogan, the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has said that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would eventually be tried as a war criminal over Israel's ongoing offensive in the Gaza Strip. Turkey, which supports a two-state solution, has heavily criticized Israel over the war with Islamist militant group Hamas. Authorities in Hamas-ruled Gaza say more than 15,500 Palestinians have been killed in the violence. In a speech to a meeting of an Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the OIC Committee in Istanbul, Erdogan claimed that Gaza is Palestinian land and will always belong to the Palestinians. Quote, beyond being a war criminal, Netanyahu is a butcher of Gaza right now, will be tried as a butcher of Gaza, Erdogan said. Quote, those who try to skip over the deaths of all those innocent people by using the excuse of Hamas have nothing left to say to humanity, end quote, he added. Unlike most of its Western allies, NATO member Turkey does not view Hamas as a terrorist group. Well, a second group of released Thai hostages have returned home. Six more Thai hostages who were released by militant Islamist group Hamas have returned to Thailand, the Thai foreign ministry had said. The released hostages were welcomed with hugs from their families at Bangkok's Suvarnabhumi Airport. Quote, I'm glad to be back, 40-year-old Awat Suliasli said, expressing gratitude to Israel and Thailand for securing their release. The arrivals followed the return of 17 other Thai hostages who were released last week. In total, 32 Thai laborers were taken to Gaza by Hamas on October 7. Another 39 were killed. 9 more Thais are believed to be among the hostages still being held in Gaza. Before the war, some 30,000 Thai laborers were working in the Israeli agricultural sector. Netanyahu's corruption trial resumes. It seems that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's corruption trial resumed on Monday after a hiatus prompted by the war with Hamas militants in Gaza. The trial was put on hold following the October 7 terror attack by Hamas, which killed 1,200 people during a rampage in Israel. Netanyahu is on trial for alleged fraud, breach of trust, and accepting bribes in his three separate cases involving powerful media moguls and wealthy associates. Netanyahu, Israel's first sitting prime minister, to stand trial denies any wrongdoing. About 6 hours ago, Israel says that 200 Hamas targets were struck overnight. Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, said it attacked 200 Hamas targets in the Gaza Strip overnight. It said the troops struck, quote, terror infrastructure, end quote, at Gaza Harbor and claimed it had found a booby trap tunnel beneath the school. The report has not been independently verified. The IDF also reported that three more soldiers were killed in action in northern Gaza on Sunday. In an official statement on Monday, today, the military confirmed the deaths of a major general, 22, a sergeant, 19, and a commander, 36, taking the total Israeli military death toll to 75 since large-scale ground operations began. Hamas-run authorities in Gaza say the death toll among Palestinians has passed 15,500, more than half of them women and children. Israel has also issued new evacuation orders for the southern Gaza. The Israeli military has renewed its calls for mass evacuations around the city of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. In a post published on X, formerly known as Twitter, on Monday, the military urged residents from around 20 areas in the city to head for areas further in the west and south. Israel has sought to define safe areas for civilians to go as it continues to expand its offensive in the Palestinian territory. However, UN officials and people on the ground say that patchy internet and electricity access have made it difficult to follow these instructions. Israeli military spokesperson Yonatan Konrikus acknowledged in a press briefing on Monday that the situation in Gaza was, quote, tough, end quote, tough. We are not trying to displace anyone. We are not trying to move anybody from anywhere permanently, he told reporters. Quote, we have asked civilians to evacuate the battlefield, and we have provided a designated humanitarian zone inside the Gaza Strip, he added, referring to a small coastal area in Gaza's southwest named Al-Mawasi. The war has displaced around three-quarters of Gaza's population of 2.3 million Palestinians. Israel is expanding the ground offensive in Gaza. Israel on Monday continued to expand its offensive against the militant Islamist group Hamas in Gaza. Fighting in the territory has intensified since Friday, when a one-week truce had expired. On Sunday, the Israeli military announced it was widening its ground operation to, quote, all the Gaza Strip, end quote. Israel carried out airstrikes on the Palestinian territory over the weekend and reported a string of rocket salvos from Gaza, most of which were intercepted. It also urged more people to evacuate in and around the city of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza to avoid the fighting. The Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says more than 15,500 people, more than half of them women and children, have been killed in the territory since October 7. Hamas is designated a terrorist organization by the United States, Germany, Israel, and several other countries. Well, on Sunday, UNICEF voiced concerns it was witnessing massive child casualties in southern Gaza, which it said was experiencing, quote, the worst bombardment of the war right now. Israeli military said it was expanding its ground operation against the militant Islamist Palestinian group Hamas to, quote, every part, end quote, of the Gaza Strip. Israeli forces also announced they had discovered 800 shafts leading to Hamas's network of tunnels below Gaza since October 27, when Israel began its sustained ground offensive. They said that 10,000 airstrikes had been carried out since the beginning of the war on October 7. But the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court said his office will, quote, further intensify its efforts to advance its investigations, end quote, of possible crimes by Hamas militants and Israeli forces. The number of people killed in the Gaza Strip since the start of the war with Israel reached 15,523 on Sunday, the Hamas-run health ministry said. German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock urged Arab states to work together constructively for peace between Israel and the Palestinians. She says, all those who want to end the suffering together now. End quote. She said in an interview with a German DPA news agency in Berlin. Now let's move on to the Democratic Republic of Congo. Congo's election woes are under Western scrutiny. Some have said 24 hours ago, the Congo plans to hold elections in December amid concerns about the integrity of the country's electoral process and a spiraling conflict in the east of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The process of organizing this month's general election and the DRC, Africa's fourth most populous country, has been called ill-prepared, end quote, and, quote, troubled, end quote, by some analysts. It's taking place truck of flaring rebel violence in the Congo's east and has already displaced 6.9 million people, as well as a shrinking space for dissent and accusations that Congo's Electoral Commission, the CENI, is biased towards the incumbent Felix Tshisekedi. Western nations have shown differing levels of unease about the situation in Congo, which is strategically located in Central Africa and shares borders with 9 countries and the integrity of its electoral process. The United States is evidently concerned. 2 U.S. lawmakers wrote an open letter to Tshisekedi in early November, calling on him to guarantee that the presidential, legislative, and regional elections scheduled for December 20 are free and fair, end quote. In the letter, Senator Chris Coons and Congressman Michael McCaul, who is chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, expressed their concern about the, quote, lack of transparency surrounding the electoral process so far, end quote, and increasing reports of attacks and harassment of political figures and detentions of civil society activists. CENI, which says it has registered 43.9 million voters, has failed to publish the final voter roll or allow it to be audited. Last week, 6 opposition candidates asked the country's constitutional court to compel the Electoral Commission to publish the electoral roll, warning of potential irregularities and fraud. Numerous rights organizations, both international and local, have decried the rise in political persecution in the run-up to the elections, while local press rights groups, Journalistes en Danger, Journalists in Danger, warned last week that reporters were increasingly under attack. In October, CENI President Denise Kadima even met with U.S. officials in Washington as part of a campaign to dispel concerned about the commission's past record. A State Department spokesperson told Reuters news agency at the time that the U.S. government remained concerned about, quote, possible violence, threats to press freedom and freedom of peaceful assembly, and attempts by certain parties to manipulate the vote, end quote. Just before campaigning began on November 19, the U.S. Embassy in Congo, quote, saluted, end quote, the certification of 26 presidential candidates and also, quote, noted actions by authorities to uphold the freedom of movement of political candidates, end quote. The U.S. interest is influenced by minerals. Researcher and Congo expert Jason Stearns, said that while there are those in Washington who care deeply about the dire humanitarian situation in Congo, he believes the U.S. is increasingly focused on the impoverished nation because it is worried that most of Congo's mining exports flow to China, as well as having major deposits of copper, gold, and diamonds. Congo is home to the world's largest reserves of cobalt, a key component in batteries for electric cars and mobile phones. Much of the Congo's mining sector is now owned by China and most to China, said Stern, founder of the Congo Research Group at New York University. The United States has become increasingly worried and concerned about this as tensions with China are ratcheted up, end quote. But the European Union Council issued a strongly worded statement in July about Congo's election preparations, while it noted CENI's sustained work, quote unquote. The statement highlighted criticisms and concerns made by the opposition and a civil society in Congo. Quote, ensuring the full integrity of the electoral process requires freedom of speech, media, assembly, association, and movement. Any excessive or disproportionate use of force in response to peaceful demonstrations or arbitrary detentions is incompatible with this requirement, the statement said. The European Union planned, however, to deploy a long-term election observer mission to Congo upon Tshisekedi's invitation, although these plans have since been canceled because of security concerns. Agreeing to send observers is a turnaround from the 2018 election when the government of then President Joseph Tshisekedi, Joseph Kabila, refused to accept European Union election monitors. The team of around 40 observers flew to Congo but were unable to deploy throughout the country due to security reasons, the European Union said in a statement released on November 9. Quote, due to technical constraints beyond the European Union's control, we are forced to cancel the election observation mission, end quote, it said, adding that essential telecommunications equipment had not been made available to the observers deployed in the country. This made the long-term observation, quote, impossible, end quote. The European Union is reportedly exploring other options, including having a mission of electoral experts to observe the electoral process from Kinshasa. But the Tshisekedi government said it regretted the European Union's decision. However, Congo has reportedly yet to approve the accreditation of the European Union's new ambassador, leaving the diplomatic mission empty at a pivotal time. Quote, in general, most European countries are aligning themselves with the Commission's position on monitoring and supporting the electoral process in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Bob Kabamba, a political scientist at the University of Liège in Belgium, advised. France, he said, is keeping a low profile when it comes to Congo to avoid sparking, quote, more anti-French sentiment in other African countries, end quote. As for Belgium, said Kabamba, the former colonial power originally supported Tshisekedi, who assumed power after the 2018 election, widely perceived to have been won by another candidate. But he said the, quote, shortcomings, end quote, of the election preparations on top of Tshisekedi breaking many promises, end quote, when it comes to improving governance and tackling corruption mean that Belgium has, quote, slowly begun to take a lukewarm view of the Tshisekedi regime and also of the electoral process. So despite the mineral wealth, Congo is among the five poorest nations in the world. 2022, 62% of the Congolese, around 60 million people, lived on less than $2.15 a day, according to the World Bank, and this makes the country particularly dependent on Western aid. Tshisekedi has spent a large part of his presidency outside of the country courting and negotiating with these donors, it pointed out researcher and author Jason Stern. Quote, so there's a perception that these donors are very important, unquote, something he assured the European Union is able to, quote, leverage, end quote, to deploy their observer. On the other hand, said Nick Ellaby, a Congo-based special advisor at the Open Society Africa, most African countries, most Western countries, rather, have limited leverage on the election process because they aren't funding it directly. He sees in Congo the same fatigue towards Western powers being hypocritically, particularly in their failure to rebuke a neighboring Rwanda for its support of M23 rebels fighting in eastern Congo. Although Rwanda denies supporting the M23 rebels, investigations by the United Nations, among other organizations, provide, quote, solid evidence, end quote, that it does. Tshisekedi's government was also hoping for more investment in business from Western countries, he said, to reduce its reliance on aid. Quote, this is the reason why Congo is turning again to others like China or Russia, he said. So it's amazing. It's constant back and forth that goes on around the world. Amazing, amazing. This is unexpected, but I guess corruption is corruption. Vietnam is reeling from a historic 11.4 billion euro corruption scandal. The largest corruption scandal in Southeast Asian history has shaken Vietnam's anti-graft drive. Experts have warned that the country's economic stability may be at stake. Vietnam has been rocked by the largest corruption scandal to date after authorities last month arrested a prominent real estate developer over allegedly embezzling nearly $12.4 billion, the equivalent of more than 3% of the country's gross domestic product. In 2016, Vietnam's governing Communist Party began conducting a sweeping anti-corruption campaign. Since then, it has brought down a national president and its senior government ministers, but the scale of the alleged graft involved in the latest scandal it uncovered raised questions about the true state of Vietnam's banking and property sectors. Corruption scandal in Southeast Asian history. On November 17, the Ministry of Public Security alleged that Thuong Nhi Lan, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, the chairperson of the real estate developer Van Tien Phat Holdings Group, had embezzled 304 trillion dong, that's 11.4 billion euros, from the Saigon Commercial Bank, of which he was a majority stakeholder over several years. According to the ministry statesman, Nhi Lan, who was first arrested last year, operated a vast network of more than 1,000 domestic and foreign subsidiaries, as well as further shell companies that took out more than 40 billion euros in loans from the Saigon Commercial Bank, appropriating about a third of it through ghost companies, end quote, she and her family and associates had created. In mid-November, the Ministry of Public Security also recommended the prosecution of a further 85 people, including 24 government officials and associates of Van Tien Phat Holdings Group and Saigon Commercial Bank. Well, days later, the Internal Affairs Commission of the Communist Party Central Committee recommended opening investigations into another 23 state officials, including 12 from the State Bank of Vietnam, the country's central bank. It is arguably the largest corruption scandal in recent Southeast Asian history. By comparison, the well-documented 1MDB scandal in Malaysia in the 2010s, which led to Malaysia's dominant party losing power for the first time ever, involved the theft of 4.1 billion euros from the country's sovereign wealth fund. Hanoi's anti-corruption campaign. Well, the Communist Party of Vietnam embarked on its, quote, a blazing furnace, end quote, anti-graft campaign when Nguyen Phu Thong, the party's general secretary, defeated rival Nguyen Thanh Dung. Dung was prime minister at the time and seen by many as allowing corruption to thrive. The anti-corruption campaign has resulted in hundreds, if not thousands, of party and government officials being dismissed in recent years. In January, Nguyen Xuan Phuc resigned as state president, and two deputy prime ministers were sacked over alleged corruption in the government's procurement of coronavirus test kits and the repatriation of Vietnamese nationals during the COVID-19 pandemic. Speaking this month after the revelations about the latest scandal, General Secretary Tong said that communist authorities, quote, need to conduct the anti-corruption fight and in a more efficient manner, end quote. He added, quote, we won't stop here, but we'll continue for the long term, end quote. Well, Tong Wu, a political science professor at the University of Oregon in the United States, said that General Secretary Tong could now have his sights set on some more big name targets, including the former party boss of Ho Chi Minh City, Lieutenant Hai, who is known as, quote, the most corrupt official in Vietnam, end quote. Hai was the political boss of the Southern Business Hub for decades, and although he was given a rap on the knuckles in 2020, when the corruption busters found his committee had engaged in improprieties, he has so far avoided any real punishment for his alleged wrongdoings. Quote, it is possible that Hai is next. He's also known to be close to former Prime Minister Nguyen Tan Dong, who may still be a target, said Tuan Hru, referred to the political heavyweight whom Trump defeated in 2016. Indeed, it had been suggested by analysts that Hai and Dung may have been the two richest people in Vietnam at some point in the 2010s, thanks to their alleged oversight of vast graft networks in southern Vietnam. There is no doubt that more major scandals and arrests are forthcoming, said Michael Tatowski, a journalist living in Ho Chi Minh City who writes about Vietnamese politics in his Vietnam Weekly blog. Well, a significant investigation also into sand mining is underway, and it appears police are looking closely at the renewable energy sector and Vietnam Electricity, the country's largest power company, he added. However, there are concerns that the scale of graft now being uncovered is denting economic stability. Well, the private sector is feeling the heat. When a number of private sector companies were hit with corruption allegations last year, it was suggested the anti-graft campaign was starting to affect business confidence. Reports leaked in the media claimed local government officials and civil servants were refusing to sign off on much-needed infrastructure investment deals for fear they would later be accused of corruption if the development project didn't go according to plan. Nguyen Khac Giang, a visiting fellow at the Vietnam Studies Program at the ISEAS, Yusof Ishak Institute of Singapore, pointed out that this is not the first significant investigation into a private company, but it is by far the largest. He says that in 2022, Trinh Van Quyet, chairman of Property and Leisure Company, FLC Group, and its subsidiary, Bamboo Airlines, was arrested on charges of stock market manipulation, while months later, Do An Dung, chairman of the Tan Huang Minh Property Development Group, was detained on suspicion of fraudulent appropriation of assets. Tran Ky Tan, the chairman of the Tan Hiep Phat Group, the country's largest private sector beverage producer, was arrested in April over alleged misappropriation of assets. Given what has transpired so far, the latest corruption scandal, quote, might not further deteriorate business confidence in Vietnam, nor instill fear of being investigated, Giang said. Indeed, other sources have made similar arguments, saying that business confidence is more shaken by the first investigations into private sector corruption and that the business community in Vietnam has now become somewhat accustomed to the idea, show this. So, among the many allegations against Milan and her associates were accusations that they had bribed investigators for years to get them to overlook Saigon Commercial Bank's financial discrepancies. And this included bribes reportedly paid to the then chief of State Bank of Vietnam's Inspectorate and Supervision Department. Quote, this was a total regulatory failure, said Zachary Abuza, a professor of national security strategy at the United States National War College in Washington, who added that it should raise questions about the business practices of other banks too. Quote, if Lan could bribe regulators with $5.2 million to overlook non-performing loans and other criminal behaviors at the Saigon Commercial Bank, while not other banks, end quote, Abuza had queried. Well, the latest corruption scandal also raises questions about political stability. Trong, the party chief, has torn up informal agreements on term limits and retirement ages that the Communist Party agreed to in the 1990s. Trong, who is 79, is now in his third term in office and seemingly cannot step down as he's unable to find a trusted successor. The reason why? He took on a third term in 2021, most pundits say. It remains unclear if he will try to run for a fourth term at the next National Congress in early 2026. Anti-corruption has evolved from a means to an end in itself. Combating corruption is seen as a way to uphold the party's legitimacy, said Kiang. This is the new normal of Vietnamese politics. Amazing. There's an app called No Thanks, and it's calling for the boycott of Israel-related products. The No Thanks app calls on people not to buy products from companies that support Israel. It is a legitimate form of protest, or is it anti-Semitism? The app appears to work very simply. Users can scan the barcode of a product or enter its name, and within seconds they are told to what extent the manufacturer supports Israel. Then No Thanks, end quote, is displayed, an appeal not to buy certain products. Videos on TikTok and X show that companies such as Coca-Cola and Nescafe are among those listed. The app was launched on November 13 and has been downloaded over 100,000 times so far. And social media comments suggest people around the world from India to Belgium are interested in the app. The conflict between Israel and Hamas has escalated drastically since the militant Islamist group Hamas, which is classified as a terrorist organization by the European Union, the USA, Germany, and other countries, attacked Israel on October 7, killing 1,200 people and taking around 240 hostages. Well, according to the Hamas-led health ministry, almost 15,000 people have been killed in the Palestinian as a result of the Israeli bombardment of targets in the Gaza Strip. And since then, many people around the world have positioned themselves as either pro-Israel or pro-Palestinian or even pro-Hamas, according to social media comments. The quote, No Thanks, end quote, boycott app was mainly downloaded by pro-Palestinian supporters. The app can no longer be downloaded from the Google Play Store for Android apps, and as of December 1, there is no version for iOS, that is, Apple devices. However, the app can still be downloaded in indirect ways. But who is behind the No Thanks, end quote, and what exactly is the aim, and why is the app no longer available from Google Play? According to the app itself, No Thanks, end quote, was developed by Ahmed Bashbash, currently living in Hungary. Contacted by Deutsche Welle, he said he was a Palestinian from Gaza. Bashbash said he lost his brother in the massacre, quote, unquote, and that his sister died in 2020 because she did not receive medical support from Israel in time. Quote, I made it I made it in behalf of my brother and my sister, who I lost because of this brutal occupation. And my goal is to try to prevent what happened to me to happen to another Palestinian, Bashbash advised Deutsche Welle by email. He compiled the list of companies that allegedly support Israel with the help boycott Zionism, quote-unquote, and Ulas Dempat, quote-unquote. The boycott Zionism website advertises with the slogan, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, end quote, which is sometimes interpreted as anti-Semitic. Some see the phrase as a slogan that denies Israel's right to exist. The list of brands that should be boycotted, according to the website, operators include world-famous companies such as Adidas, McDonald's, Chanel, Netflix, and Apple, and also represent all kinds of industries, from food to cosmetics to streaming providers. Some companies are on the list because they jointly launched a campaign after October 7 in which they condemned Hamas' terrorist attack on Israel. According to the websites, other companies invest in Israel startups, for example, or finance the theft of Palestinian territory, end quote. Well, Bashbash said that he was told the app was banned by Google for including the sentence, quote, you can see if the product in your hand supports killing children in Palestine, end quote, which was displayed on the home screen of the app. Experts say this sentence can be interpreted as either critical of Israel or anti-Semitic. Milon Mendel, director of the Anne Frank Educational Center, advised Deutsche Welle that the phrase recalls an anti-Semitic belief in the Middle East that Jews murder children in order to produce Passover bread from their blood. Ufa Jensen, deputy director of the Center for Research on Anti-Semitism, also said that this expression could come close to being accused of anti-Semitism because it uses the image of Israel as a child molester. The other interpretation of the sentence is the fact that children are indeed being killed by Israeli airstrikes in Gaza during the current war, said Mendel, and since they are not being murdered intentionally but are dying in the course of the war, the sentence about a product supporting the killing of children in Palestine can also be seen as a polemical exaggeration, quote, as a means of emotionalizing it, end quote, as Mendel put it. Jensen added that Hamas also killed Israeli children on October 7. A sentence like that escapes this context and is then highly polemical, he continued. So what's the aim of the boycott? According to Mendel, the important question is what the exact aim of the boycott is. Since October 7, it has been clear that not everyone is pursuing the same goals. Quote, there are those who want a Palestinian state alongside the Israeli state, and there are those who want the destruction of the state of Israel. The point here is to distinguish between these two groups. The means of economic boycott, the individual decision not to buy products, is initially legitimate, Mendel continues. However, the Arab boycott against Israel is not new. It began in the early 1970s, according to Jensen. There's also a minority of left-wing Jews who are critical of Israel and support such campaigns. While the boycott is also propaganda against Israel, overall, it is therefore necessary to differentiate whether it is a call critical of Israel or whether it is anti-Semitism, says Mendel. But quite a few social media users in Germany think of the National Socialist call of 1933, don't buy from Jews, end quote, when they hear such calls for a boycott. But such a comparison could also be seen as historically inaccurate and problematic in itself, as it runs the risk of trivializing National Socialism. This implies that there was a specific cause for the Nazi boycott of Jews, and that non-Jewish Germans and Jewish Germans were two conflicting parties before 1933. That is, of course, historically completely wrong, explained Mendel. Well, Jensen also finds its connection to National Socialism difficult. internationally, there are dozens of other examples of boycott measures, end quote. He mentions, for example, the decades-long boycott of South Africa up until the 1990s because of the racial segregation at the time. On the one hand, these calls can be compared, but on the other, sometimes anti-Semitic ideas are also mixed into calls for a boycott of Israel. The economic damage is unlikely. Furthermore, the problem that would arise for Israel as a result of such a boycott would not be economic damage. It is a cultural and scientific boycott that goes hand in hand with it, explains Mendel. Progressive forces in Israel, in science, in art, in the peace movement, also in Europe and North Africa, are being marginalized and excluded, he said. This escalation has also been achieved in part through such measures. On the contrary, the overall aim should be to support peaceful progressive forces on both sides. In the meantime, Ahmed Bashbash's first goal is to make the app available again in the popular app stores. The app is free, and all the profits he makes with it are sent to Palestinian organizations that help the people of Gaza, Bashbash said in his app. Okay, bear with me a moment. This is really very, very interesting. In Nepal, same-sex marriage is a milestone for the LGBTQ rights in Asia. Just about an hour ago, we heard that in Nepal, a cisgender man and a cisgender woman, legally considered a man, became the first couple in South Asia to have their same-sex marriage legally recognized. In late November, Surendra Pandey and Maya Gurung became the first same-sex couple in Nepal to have their marriage officially recognized following a years-long process of legal wrangling. The legally recognized same-sex marriage is the first of its kind in a South Asian country and marks a milestone for LGBTQ rights. Quote, we have achieved legal recognition, a monumental victory, not just for us, but for the entire LGBTQ community, Pandey advised Deutsche Welle, adding he is grateful for the support from local officials and communities. Quote, we got justice, now we are complete together, end quote, Guillaume advised Deutsche Welle. It was a lengthy legal process. However, the couple's journey was far from easy and was marred by social judgments and family pressure on top of the protracted legal and procedural hurdles. In 2007, Nepal's Supreme Court had ordered the government to change existing legal provisions to allow same-sex marriages. But successive governments failed to pass required legislation that would mandate lower courts to legally recognize same-sex marriages. 2017, Pandey and Gurung were married in a Hindu wedding ceremony. In June of 2023, they filed a petition in Kathmandu District Court seeking legal recognition of their marriage after the Supreme Court instructed municipal authorities to provide an interim registry, quote-unquote, for same-sex marriage until existing marriage legislation could be amended. The couple had thus expected the registration process to go smoothly. However, both the Kathmandu District Court and another high court refused to register the marriage, claiming that federal law only allowed the registration of heterosexual couples, and this is despite the Supreme Court ruling. Well, Pandey is 27, identifies as a cisgender male, and Gurung, 38, is a transgender woman who is legally considered a male. Well, the lower court based their rulings on Nepal's civil code, which defines marriage as between a man and a woman. The Supreme Court ruling had attempted to get around this by creating the interim registry until the law was changed. But the claimed national law would have to be changed before they recognized Pandey and Gurung's marriage. However, Nepal's home ministry said in the last week of November that all local administration offices are allowed to register same-sex marriages. On November 29, Pandey and Gurung received their marriage certificates from the Dordi Rural Municipality in western Nepal's Lamjung District, where Gurung is from. This registration, including operating a joint bank account, holding properties, and adopting children in the future, Pandey had said. When Nepal's LGBTQ community celebrates, the local community in Lamjung district, including a women's group, has celebrated the validation of the couple's wedding with various cultural events, including dances and music. The pair's wedding recognition was also celebrated by the LGBTQ community in the ancient city of Kirtipur on the outskirts of Kathmandu on Sunday. Well, as the first to register, our union will persist in championing the causes and rights of others within the community, Pandey had said. 4 months ago, the couple founded Mayako Pakichan Identity of Love, an organization aimed at advocating for the rights of the LGBTQ community and addressing forced marriages among sexual minorities. Sunil Babu Pant, an openly gay former lawmaker who attended the celebrations for the couple, said that such events are part of a progressive shift in Nepali society. Nepali society has become very liberal and positive in this respect, Pant had advised Jaitrevella. He added that the historic achievement should help pave the way for the recognition and protection of the rights of sexual minorities across Nepal, as well as potentially influencing neighboring nations to reconsider their stance on same-sex unions. However, in neighboring India's Supreme Court took a step in the opposite direction by refusing to legalize same-sex marriage. In Nepal, no official data is available on same-sex and transgender couples who want to come forward and register their marriages. However, Pan said that there are up to 200 married same-sex and transgender couples who could come forward to register their unions. Pant, founder of the Blue Diamond Society, which advocates for the causes of sexual minorities, has called for an urgent parliamentary action to enact legislation governing various aspects of same-sex marriages. And these include joint property ownership, inheritance, child adoption, divorce, and guardianship in cases of separation. Nepal's progressive steps have included allowing other, quote-unquote, as a gender category in passports since 2015 and introducing the other, quote-unquote, gender category in the 2021 census, where 2,928 individuals identified themselves under others, quote-unquote, among approximately 30 million people. Pant, however, said that sexual minorities are also underrepresented in official records and has called for improved enumeration methods in census data. Well, there is opposition to same-sex marriage, which remains. Nepal's journey toward recognizing same-sex marriage was not free from opposition. A section of conservative Nepalese society is still against the idea of legalizing same-sex marriages, although opponents are gradually diminishing in number. Garung, or Gurung, has largely been supported by her family. Pandey, orphaned at the age of six and raised by his maternal uncle, initially faced opposition from his sister regarding his engagement to Gurung. Kamal Thapa, chairperson of Nepal's conservative Rashtriya Prajatantra Party and former deputy prime minister, advised Jaitrevella that legalizing same-sex unions would break the, quote, sanctity of marriage and family values, end quote, in Hindu-majority Nepali society. Quote, I support the rights of individuals to love and be with their loved ones. However, when it comes to same-sex marriage, it contradicts our fundamental concept of the institution of marriage, which traditionally embodies a sacred union between a man and a woman, he said. So that's the story there. Well, it's time for us to go. Thank you very much for being with us today. And tomorrow I will not be doing a broadcast because I have an operation that I have to undergo at the hospital. I have to be there by 10 o'clock. The operation will take place at 11:30, so shouldn't be too long. And I will be able to return home that afternoon. Anyway, so that's the story. And so we'll see if I'm in and I guess if they release me, I should be in okay shape to engage in tomorrow's broadcast, but I'm not sure. So we'll advise you, that's for sure. Take care and be well. Thanks for being with us today. Most appreciated. Bye.